Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Tommy Patterson welcomes senior security engineer Varun Sharma to the show as they discuss how Microsoft IT secured their applications for the cloud. Tune in as they chat about the security process MSIT goes through when they move an application into the cloud, as well as what user authentication considerations, risks, and deployment techniques they must consider. Tommy, the mic is yours.
Today we've got a special guest, the guy that does the engineering of the security for how Microsoft internal IT puts their applications into Windows Azure for our internal use. And so I want to introduce Varun Sharma. And Varun, you're out of India, right?
Yes, that's right.
Great. So tell us a little bit about your role, what you do, and you know, how long you've been at Microsoft, and what, you know, give me the background.
Okay, so I've been at Microsoft for about 6 years now, and I'm working as a senior security engineer in Microsoft's information security and risk management team. And you know, I'm a security advisor to Microsoft IT's line of business applications, and I also deliver secure application development trainings.
Okay, excellent. So today we're going to talk about how you guys implement security as it pertains to Windows Azure, and we'll also talk a little bit about how that may have changed from the traditional way of rolling out security in-house. Tell me a little bit about the security or the compliance requirements that played a role when you were selecting your applications.
Right, so you know, before I answer that question, let me just give you a bit of background into Microsoft IT security policy and you know how that's organized. So one of the key aspects of the IT policy, security policy, is data classification. And you know, so all line of business applications are supposed to classify data into either low business impact or medium business impact or high business impact. And you know, where high business impact data would be something that if it is compromised would cause catastrophic impact to Microsoft. And at the same time, you know, on WindowsAzure.com, there is a trust center which talks about sort of security controls that are built into Windows Azure and you know, the certifications that Azure has. So based on those two pieces of information, the way it works out in Microsoft IT is that applications that have LBI or MBI data, they can, you know, they can move to Windows Azure, but if it has HPI data, then it requires senior management approval to ensure that, you know, it complies with whatever the requirements are and so on. So that's how it affects the application selection.
Okay, so sounds like small to medium size impact, you guys can pretty much figure out what you're going to move over. Something with a high impact requires, you know, pretty big sign-off, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's
understandable. We get a lot of questions at our events. Right now we're doing a online series on rolling out virtual machines in Windows Azure. And a lot of the questions I get are, how good is the security? What all has been put in place to keep people from getting to my data? So you have an organization with 100,000 people, and you have, you know, exciting new products like Windows Blue that we've been seeing popping up here and there. The new Xbox One announcement that came out. Certainly we wouldn't want that kind of information leaking out to the public too early. And with Azure being a public cloud, I can see where the security requirements may change a little bit. Great. So back to that, to the question then. So you define the impact levels, and then you define whether or not it's approved to get onto Azure. So can you talk about a little bit about how you define that compliance requirement? Is there a strict guide that you go by to define what that requirement is?
So are you talking about the definition of that high business impact, medium business impact?
Right. How do you define those levels?
Right, so there is a high-level guidance which has been provided, and you know, and then there's also some detailed examples. So for example, a social security number or a credit card number would be high business impact.
Right.
And, you know, typically a name and email address, you know, which is a personally identifiable information of that sort, would generally get treated as medium business impact.
All right. So okay. Once an application has been selected to be moved into the cloud, how does MSIT build security into it? Is there a process that you follow?
Yeah, that's right. And the process is nothing but the security development lifecycle process, which is SDL. And, you know, which was the process being followed, you know, even before Windows Azure. And, you know, so, I mean, this is the same process that even the Microsoft products follow, you know, where for different phases in a project's life cycle, you know, like requirements or design or build, there are various different security deliverables or things that need to be done. So, for example, in the design phase, there is a threat model that has to be, and in the build phase, there are these, you know, checklists or attestation questions about security requirements that need to be answered. And the way this helps is that, you know, so as application teams follow this SDL process, the way it helps is a lot of issues, you know, apply even to sites or services that may be hosted on Windows Azure. So, for example, things like cross-site scripting or SQL injection, you know, these are things that are, you know, that may be put in, you know, by mistake, they may go into a website that's hosted on Windows Azure. And then what's happened with, you know, Windows Azure is that there are also some unique security issues that have then been added into the checklist or into the attestation questions, so that as teams follow this process, they, you know, it ensures that security is built in right from the start.
Okay. So when a user logs in to Windows Azure, that user authentication piece for the websites, how has it changed? Or talk about that process and then how it may have changed since you started doing you know, Azure versus an on-premise website.
Right. So for, you know, for a typical on-premise website, the way this works is that any Microsoft employee, you know, who has a domain credential, would use integrated Windows authentication to log into this to the site. But, you know, when the same site is moved over to Windows Azure, because it's not domain joined, integrated Windows authentication won't work. So what's been done is that Microsoft IT has an ADFS installation, and, you know, we call it Corp STS. And all Microsoft IT line of business applications that are hosted on Windows Azure, they use this Corp STS. So the flow for the end users is that, you know, when they go to this website, they're redirected to this ADFS instance and they see a form with a username and a password, and they can enter their domain credentials there, and then they're redirected back to the website. And the website can use Windows Identity Foundation, you know, to parse the SAML token, which is returned and converted into a iClaims principle, and then the site can make decisions based on those claims. So the architecture, you know, and the design for all has changed, the authentication architecture, because of this.
Interesting, very cool. So we have phone, we have modern Windows 8 apps now. The authentication for those services, how much of it are we doing in Azure right now? I know there's a lot of buzz about Windows Phone apps and Windows 8 apps. So I know we're using them internally. I know a couple apps that I use that are actually based there. Talk about that and how we've, you know, how that authentication works too.
Yeah, so this is, you know, quite interesting, because a lot of new services or these Microsoft IT line of business applications that are coming up, you know, they want to create it so that the same service can be called by a Windows Phone app and the same can be called by a Windows 8 Metro or a modern app. And the typical design here is to use Windows Azure Access Control Service. You know, so let me just cover the Windows 8 Windows Phone app first. So in a typical phone app, what would happen is that the app would, you know, drop a browser control. And in the browser control, it would put the sign-in URL, the URL as the Corp STS or ADFS instances URL. And so the end user would see the same sort of UI and can enter the domain credentials there. And then core identity
HTTP
has been
provider.
set as on one of the ACS namespace. So that SAML token gets sent to ACS, and ACS, since it's a claims transformation service, it transforms it into a simple web token, which is a SWT token, and it sends it back to the phone app, and then the phone app can add it as a header in a call to the service. And the interesting part is, even if this service is now hosted on premise, the phone app can make a call through the Windows Azure service bus using the same sort of design. And the service bus can validate the header and relay the call on premise. And this on the service side, then what happens is the service just gets that SWT simple web token and validates it using the shared secret key that it shares with ACS, and then can again authenticate the end user based on it. And even for modern apps, the design is similar. Instead of a browser control, it uses what is called as a web authentication broker, which is a feature of modern apps.
Great, Varun. That's excellent. So, just curious, how hard is this to do for one of our consumer or for one of our customers that wants to roll this type of security out for their organization, where they have Active Directory, but now they're changing to an Azure-based application?
Right, so one of the important things would be to have an ADFS installation, and other than that, the design that I spoke about for the phone app, for example, there is a sample for that in the identity training kit, that can be used to do this.
Great. So they walk through the sample, they get it integrated, they get it all set up, and then they're up and running. Very same way that we do it here at Microsoft. Very cool. Okay, let's talk about one last piece that I think is kind of the fun side or the scary side. What were some of the unique risks or security concerns that you guys have when you do Azure applications, when you apply those into Azure?
Right, so let me just give you some of the examples. So one important thing is about the number of secret keys or passwords that Windows Azure introduces. For our on-premise systems, if there was a system that was calling a SQL Server, it typically used to use integrated Windows authentication. But now, if the same application needs to use SQL Azure, then it needs to have a SQL Azure password. And similarly, if it needs to use the Windows Azure storage services, it needs to have a shared secret key that needs to be then maintained in the configuration file. So what these number of secrets, what they do is that they make deprovisioning a issue. So if someone from the operations team decides to leave the company or changes roles, then how do you deprovision access? Because otherwise this person could access that component from anywhere on the internet. So to solve
Recommendation
this,
is to
to rotate these passwords, or change these passwords or keys regularly. And so that's one interesting issue. Another one is about the use of a remote desktop protocol. So Windows Azure has a feature where you can enable RDP on one of the VMs, and then the operations team can RDP into it to troubleshoot. And what we find is a lot of teams just keep that feature on all the time, and that introduces a risk, because someone on the internet can then just try to RDP, and if they can guess the password, they can log into the VM. Right, so the recommendation there is to keep it off, and just enable if there is a need to troubleshoot, and then again disable it as soon as the troubleshooting is done.
And that's done by going into the endpoints and then unselecting the RDP endpoint. Is that correct?
Right, that can be done through the management portal.
Yeah. I've seen where we've also randomized the port. So it used to be 3389 directly to the virtual machine. Now we've randomized the port. So there's one layer. And then we've also added the new user account that you create for each virtual machine. So it's not just plain old administrator. So that's good. And then there's also the strong password. But great point. You go in, you get the machine configured. There's no real reason to leave RDP turned on. So go back into the management portal and go into your endpoints and then turn off that particular endpoint so there's not a way to get back in. until you're ready, then you go turn it back on. Very, very good.
Right.
Any other risks or concerns?
Yeah, so another thing which is not a new risk, but you know, it's a different way of solving it, is about running antivirus on these Windows Azure VMs.
Right.
And you know, so the guidance has been to either use Microsoft Endpoint Protection, which is, you know, a new feature, or before that, teams used to use custom scripts to install Forefront Endpoint Protection, you know, so that these Windows Azure VMs have antivirus running on them. So it's not a new risk, but it's a different way of solving the problem.
Understandable. Okay. Well, Varun, this has been great. Are there any other things you want to talk about or cover before we wrap up today's show?
Yeah, one final point I wanted to talk about was about, you know, how these applications get deployed onto Windows Azure, and specifically around the way authentication is done to the management portal. You know, so the way this happens in Microsoft IT is that when, you know, any employee goes to windows.azure.com/microsoft.com, they get redirected to our ADFS instance, which is Corp STS, and then they can use their own domain credentials to log in to the management portal. And you know, this is a great thing because one, deprovisioning users becomes easy, and two, you know, our password complexity requirements and everything is taken care of. And you know, so this is something that other organizations can also do if they, you know, onboard their ADFS instance onto the management portal so that they can use their own Active Directory accounts to log in. And you know, one of the ways that Microsoft IT can further improve it is by, for example, having two-factor authentication on our ADFS instance, which is there already, but it's not mandatory. So, you know, so the risk that comes out of this is that the security of the entire solution then depends upon a single password. So that's a, you know, that's a good thing that MSIT does, that that others can also follow.
Great. Well, I know I learned a lot today about what goes on behind the scenes and security from a Microsoft IT perspective. Any other parting words you want to talk through with the audience before we wrap this up?
That's all. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you, Varun. It's been great having you on the show. I know we've learned a lot, and there's so much to dive into with Windows Azure. A lot of people have started to get their feet wet with it, but you know, diving into the security piece, we really need to do more of that, because people just need to understand this is a new beast, right? This new cloud, this new public cloud that we all have been talking about for years, it's actually here now, and it's actually something we can all take advantage of. So great to have you on the show. Great to see this the way this security implementations are working. And you know, as always, great to have you.
Thank you.